Hour number four on a Wednesday. Hope you're having a good one. Kevin Dunn is here. I'm Chad Hastings. And here is the Tom Herman meet and greet over at DKR, north end of the stadium, 45 days away from the first game with Maryland. And the coach is sitting right here with us, head coach Tom Herman. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Oh, thanks for coming by.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much for the time.
We apologize. You've already had to take two or three selfies because of us over here. And I asked you before the interview, how many selfies? You look like you do this a lot. You said, no, it didn't take well. How many do you take a day?
It wasn't that. The guy actually turned it off. He didn't snap the deal. But, it depends on the setting, depends on the day. Probably something like this, I would imagine. 8 to 10, but on a normal day in the office, zero, so I think it averages out to maybe a couple a week.
Is it safe to say that you understand now, better now than you did last year, what it's like to be the head coach at the flagship state university of Texas?
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to think, having had this be my dream job, that and being a graduate assistant here during Mac Brown's early years, that I had a general idea, but there's always a learning curve. There's always things that come up, but especially to have Coach Brown to lean on and have as a sounding board, a mentor for counsel. I think that certainly eased the transition, there weren't too many surprises.
Talking with Tom Herman here on the horn. All right, let's get right into the softball questions. Let's talk play calling, because there's been a discussion the last couple of days. Okay, so I've heard multiple folks since the bowl game talk about the fact that you called plays in the bowl game. But then I realized, wait, I don't know if I've actually heard the coach say he called plays. Did you call plays in the bowl game?
I did.
The whole game. Okay. So in terms of where that's headed, timetable-wise, when would you like to make that choice on who'll be calling offensive plays, and will we in the media and the fans out there, will we find out when you make that choice?
You probably won't know, but I'd like to kind of explain just like really very minor differences in how it was the entire season versus the bowl game. So I have always been, even at my time at Houston when Major was our offensive coordinator, in my time here, there is not one single call on offense that doesn't go through me. If I don't like the call, I can certainly say, no, don't call that, let's call this. And then there's very, very many times where I'll say, hey, Tim, next first down, take a shot down the field. Or Tim, hey, we're not running the ball well inside, we got to get the ball in the perimeter. Or Tim, we're not protecting well, we got to get the quarterback on the move. Or Tim, next time on the goal line, they're packing the box, it's time for a naked. Or, so it's really the difference in Tim call inside zone versus me saying deuce right 44 zone. I mean, there's really not much difference because of how intimate my involvement is in the offense. So, again, we're splitting hairs a little bit. Did I actually say deuce right 44 zone in the bowl game? Yes, but
right.
In prior games, I would have said Tim run inside zone, or Tim we got to throw a post. The safety's creeping down low. We got to throw a post over his head. So there's a ton of involvement regardless of who's calling plays. I get that it's a hot topic around here. It has been for it feels like forever.
but.
The way that we run our offense is very collaborative. We feel like, again, even when I was the offense coordinator at Ohio State, that you win the game Sunday through Friday. You win the game by either game plan on Sundays and Mondays, your installation of that game plan in your practices, and then your players' ability to retain and execute that game plan. And I used to say all the time, I used to joke all the time, if I'm doing my job as the offensive coordinator, this is when I was at Ohio State, then I could step off the curb and get hit by a bus the morning of the game, and any one of our assistants could call the game just like I would. And
right.
So it's I'm not quite sure why it's garnered so much attention, we're going to do whatever is helps us win and helps us move the ball. But I think the development of our players, the development of our offense, through the course of this offseason is going to play a much, much bigger role than who's saying deuce right 44 zone.
Gotcha.
When you are saying deuce right 44 zone, though, how big a difference, there's been some talk about this, is calling the plays from the sideline versus calling it from the booth? Do you notice a huge one?
I thought I would, but it wasn't. There was not an issue. As long as you're getting good information from the press box,
right,
which I did in the bowl game from Tim Beck and the guys up there, then, you know, it's if you trust, you're getting good information, you trust that information, then there's, again, it's collaborative.
You're right, you know? Exactly. And as long as you trust those eyes up there, I've heard coaches say that before, if you're a good play caller, which you are, you can do both. How does Herb Hand enter the equation? Now, what have you seen from him so far as the offensive line coach, and how will he help with the game plan and scheming of this run game?
Well, he's been a great fit. You know, we've seen development from our offensive line. Obviously, you know, the cards that we were dealt last year in terms of injuries, and
yeah.
I mean, so we're starting a true freshman right tackle, or we lose our best run blocking tight end in Andrew Beck. We lose our best run blocking offensive lineman in Elijah Rodriguez, and then we lose our best overall lineman, Connor Williams, for most of the season. And I think we had 8 or 9 different starting lineups. We started guys on the offensive line that hadn't even played in a game for Texas, let alone start a game for Texas. And so, you know, that's not a recipe, you know, regardless of who's coaching the offensive line. But Herb Hand has done wonders. He's provided some ideas, some different ways of doing things from places that he's been. He'll be you know, an equal, but we're all involved in the game planning. There's no, you know, I know there's some staffs that, you know, the offensive coordinator goes and sits in his office for a whole day or two and then goes and hands out a game plan, you know, goes to position. We don't. We sit in the room Sunday night and then all day Monday from 7 a.m. till midnight, and we watch video and we talk, and we collaborate, and we throw out ideas, we bounce ideas off of each other, so that, again, everybody is very familiar with all facets of the game plan.
Talking with Tom Herman here on the Horn, a quarterback question here about Shane. I enjoyed your orchestra analogy at the Big 12 media days. My question is, can you, in trying to teach the vocal leadership part, because you want him to be vocal, not because you want it, because it needs to happen. So do you have experience from your time in football of where that third string violin can actually become the leader of the orchestra? Have you watched that happen?
Oh, yeah. Braxton Miller was that way. Braxton Miller was a very, you know, he's a great leader but by example, but really didn't speak a lot, wasn't very vocal, and he came out of his shell throughout the course of his tenure when I was there with him, and it improved his game. And again, when I say that, it's not just talking, it's not just rah-rah, it was audibling and you know, giving a wide receiver a sly little change of a route or change in a protection because you know the blitz is coming from here or there, rather than just get the play, here's the play, snap the ball. You know, that's not – a quarterback's got a lot more to do than just play the song, right?
Yeah. Right.
He's got to orchestrate the song.
Yeah, okay.
Has it slowed down for Sam?
Oh, yeah. He made some throws this spring. One, that, you know, in his release and the velocity on the football was well ahead of where I had ever seen it. But he also threw with much greater anticipation and confidence. So I think the game has slowed down.
In terms of I wanted to ask you about Jason Washington and his effect on not only the football team but those relationships, because the more stories we hear from the recruiting trail, it seems like every other guy that he's involved with, I hear, well, it was that relationship with Jason Washington that was so important. Just talk about how important you feel like he's been, and maybe some examples where you're thinking, wow, this guy really is that good.
Yeah, well, our mantra, or our three qualifications, if you will, for an assistant coach is, one, bring in quality student athletes to the University of Texas. So that means recruit. Number two is develop your unit and make those players better at their specific position. And then a very distant third is scheme, is, you know, provide some input into the, either the game plan or some new ideas. But that's, again, there's an old saying in football. It's not the X's and O's. It's the Jimmys and Joes.
Yeah.
So you got to recruit great players, and you got to develop them. And there isn't a better corners coach in America. I mean, I think he's got 8 players in the NFL right now that were 0 or 2-star players coming out of high school. I mean, so he's an unbelievable developer of talent, but he's also a phenomenal recruiter, and he does it because he's real. He talks to these kids more. He's never quite selling. He's always relating, and there's a big difference. You know, he's getting to know these kids. He's getting to know their families, their parents, their girlfriends, their coaches, and just, hey, this is who we are. And if you want to come here and be a part of it, great. If not, if this isn't your cup of tea, then I have shown you all there is to see about me and about our staff and about the University of Texas and our program. And if you choose someplace else, so be it. But the relationship part, he can relate to so many different kinds of young men. Hmm.
Defensively, I think about what Coach Orlando did last year. And after that first game, I think there were a lot of us thinking, uh-oh, is this not the real deal? He's the real deal. The defense was the real deal. How much more comfortable are the guys coming into year two, just understanding his language, his verbiage, and then being able to add to that?
I don't think you'll see a whole lot of addition, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think, you know, we're going to play to the strengths of the personnel. We're going to make sure that we get the best 11 guys on the field somehow, some way. But it's amazed me. When I hired him, my first staff at Houston, he was the only one of the 9 assistants that I didn't know or had worked with before. But I went out and I said, okay, who's a guy that is multiple bases out of an odd front but can, you know, slide into a 4-man front, can bring pressure everywhere? And I studied a bunch of different guys, and he was it. And when we first started talking about installation, it amazed me how much defense he can get put in a short period of time. I mean, we carry more defense than most places in America. And, you know, and we only – it's not the NFL. We only get them for 20 hours a week, too. And so but he's got an uncanny way of teaching it, of grouping it together so that it makes sense to our players. And, you know, we couldn't be prouder to have him.
Staying on the defensive side, we've had the pleasure of having Charles Omenihu as our summer intern. He's working with us a couple days a week. And I've been a big fan of Charles's ever since. When you lay eyes on the guy, it's like, wow, that looks like a football player, right? Talk about what you think Coach Orlando and this defense can do for number 90 this year. How good do you think he can be by the end of 18?
Oh, wow. I think it starts with Yancey McKnight and what he's been able to do in terms of improving his strength and hip mobility and explosiveness. But I think, you know, Charles is very versatile. You know, he's a guy that can play on the edge in a 4-down front. He's a guy that can play head up the tackle in a 3-man front and wreak some havoc in the B-gap as well. And so that's going to be the biggest thing for him. Somebody asked me that at Media Days yesterday as well, like, what does he need to improve on? And the only thing I could think of, he got so much better as the year progressed defending the run. We know he's a tremendous pass rusher, but to be an every down player, you got to defend the run too, and he got better. Is there still a little ways to go there? Certainly, and he knows that. And so that's what I think the biggest thing is: develop his ability in the run game, but then also kind of turn him loose on the edge when the time is right.
Yep. What are some concerns or maybe some things you want to get accomplished defensively as you head into summer camp?
Well, we gotta figure out a way to get these young guys on the field. They're extremely talented, especially the four that were here early in Deli Adeoye, Anthony Cook, B.J. Foster, Caden Stearns. They did not look out of place at all for guys that are supposed to be picking out tuxedos for the senior prom, you know. And so we got to figure out a way to get those guys on the field without disrupting chemistry and flow of game. So I think that's – challenge is not the right word, but maybe it is. We've got to be very strategic about it, and it's going to take some thought and some planning. And then, other than that, you know, we got to find somebody, whether it's Chris Nelson, or Puna. it's a combination of Chris Nelson and Gerald Wilbon, somebody to come close at least. Are we going to be, you know, are we expecting those guys to be Puna Ford? No. But if we can get close to the production that Puna had at that position, that's a big goal of ours going into fall camp.
I do like how you didn't pull the, oh, no, they're young. Sometimes you'll see five-star guys who do come into the spring and they kick ass and they're doing well, and the coach goes, I don't know, though. I don't know. But you're saying right now, though, these guys need to be on the field.
They do. Okay. Yeah, they proved that. And I would imagine there's some that just got here in June as well that are going to need to see the field too. So that's going to be the biggest thing, is to make sure that the line that you cross it or walk is, you know, you want continuity, you want consistency, but you also want your best guys on the field in every given situation too. So that'll be a pretty good chess match for both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and a lot of seniors, Chad, on that defense. I look at the starters and then those freshmen coming in. It's going to be a mix of classes.
If you're good enough, you're old enough.
Right.
Tom Herman joining us here on the Horn. At the bowl game, in the post game, Brecken Hager, as always, great to the press, but he talked about it being a crossroads moment. He talked about you winning the locker room in the bowl game. And I just wanted to know from you, did you have that same feeling? Or when you heard him say that, did you think, wait a minute, I already thought I had him. I already thought there was a moment. Like, was there a big moment in that locker room?
No, I think they won themselves. You know, I think we stayed the same. We didn't change. I think, but there was, you know, it wasn't just winning the game, right? It was, by my count, we had eight guys that had started football games that didn't play in that game. They were either suspended, they chose not to play, or they were injured. So that's 8 out of 22. So that's over a third,
right,
of guys that didn't start. We were playing an SEC team, the SEC, you know. We were playing the SEC team that had won six straight games and was on fire, and we beat them 33-16 or whatever it was. And so I think it was all of those things that kind of culminated and said, hey, hang on. We finally kind of let our shield down, let our guard down a little bit. We let these guys coach us. We had fun. We worked our tails off in bowl prep. We didn't change. We still worked as hard as we did. We just made a conscious effort to have fun doing it, and then we showed up and did that. Like, holy cow! I think maybe this guy's onto something.
Yeah,
you know, maybe
right.
This guy and his staff they're onto something.
Yeah, and it was great to see, and I think a surprise to a lot of people. The offensive line, you talked about the personnel. There's no doubt that was very, very bad luck, and you came into a personnel drought, if you will, in terms of the offensive line. Mikey Grandy is a guy we've been asked about as we're interviewing here with you right now. Is a guy who had the concussion in the spring. Is he going to be available? And any other guys you can tell us about who may be ready to go who we don't know about yet?
Everybody will be cleared. Everybody is cleared. There's a few limitations just from continuing to rehab, like a Trey Watson is still – he's cleared to do everything, but from some minor limitations, but should be cleared when we start training camp. The same with Cade Brewer. He's just a couple minor modifications. Got to watch his rep count. And unfortunately, Mikey Grandy is medically disqualified.
Okay.
The doctor said, you know, it's not smart for you to try to continue to play football. So he's going to continue here at the University of Texas, get his degree on scholarship, and we wish him the best of luck.
Coach, before we let you go to take more selfies, a silly one from me. I heard you tell Craig about this retreat that the coaches are doing coming up. When you guys go on the retreat, we're all about food on this show. What is the food that you cannot wait to get on at this retreat? What are you looking forward to?
The fajitas. Yeah, and don't ask me where they're from. We're blessed enough to have Bill Duvall donate his ranch on Lake Austin for 2 days.
So how do you build your fajita? Let's go through this. We talking beef chicken? You a shrimp guy? How do you go about it?
I'm a steak fajita guy all the way.
Okay.
Cheese, lettuce, salsa, and then depending on the guacamole.
Whoa, no. Ooh, sour cream though.
No sour cream.
No sour cream.
What do you need?
Is that the Cali in you?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
What do you need to see from that guacamole? What draws you to the guacamole?
I like jalapenos and cilantro. Nice. I think cilantro is the most underrated herb in the history of herbs.
Wow.
What you do? Wow. Now, cilantro, yes. You would agree cilantro is love or hate. There is no in the middle because it's licorice-y to some people.
I don't know because I love it.
You love it?
You're a lover.
I can't imagine anyone not loving it.
Coach, That's awesome. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right. Have a good time here.
And thank you so much.
Get your selfie
Thanks.
On, all right?
Thanks, guys.
Thank
Welcome.
You.
That's Tom Herman. It's the Tom Herman meet and greet. So he's about to go take some selfies and shake some hands and say hi to some folks, some of our great partners here at the station. Coming up, we'll get you the big three, including Kawhi Leonard's new home. And is he happy about it or not? This is The Horn.
This is Scott Crossett with Apple Commercial Leasing. That's right.